You're watching right now some of the Trump visit to France. Of course, we have the Daniel Penny trial today, the verdict which came in. And golly, Syria, we go away one weekend. Well, we didn't go away. We just had a weekend and all hell breaks loose. So welcome to the program. And that a lot to get into. Dana Lash here with you. We're at the top of this first hour. I want to jump into, before we do all our greetings and salutations, the verdict in the Daniel Penny trial was just announced just a little bit ago, and not guilty is the verdict. Of course, the promise of riots and everything else have already started. It wouldn't be a day that, you know, ended in Y if it wasn't for protests and threats of riots and everything else with this verdict. In fact, I was watching, and I don't know if we have it, if we can get it. It just happened, so I know we probably don't have it, but the his father, Daniel, or Jordan Ely's father, who they had this press conference, and they had some of these activists, some of the community leaders that got up there, and they were making their remarks. And his father was like, "I miss my son, and I miss my son, and it's and this shouldn't have to happen, et cetera, et cetera." Okay, his dad is a deadbeat dad who had nothing to do with him. He gave him up. He wasn't involved in his life at all. He didn't know that his son was on drugs. He didn't know any, or maybe he did, but he didn't do anything. He knew nothing. Nothing about Jordan Ely. Jordan Ely's dad knew nothing about him. He wasn't interested in him until Jordan Ely was dead. And then all of a sudden, oh, here comes the dad, because he thinks that he can get some kind of something. He thinks that he can really get some, maybe some money in a civil suit. And he gets up there. They also had Eric Garner's mom up there, which I thought, you cannot compare Eric Garner to Jordan Ely. Those are two entirely stupidly different cases. Because Eric Garner, if you remember, was the man who was put into a hold. And he was first, police first went up to him because he was selling loose cigarettes, right? Remember the whole Lucy law in New York. So in New York, because New York wants to get its tax dollars, they made it to where you could no longer sell singular cigarettes. And this was what the city council did. So they decided that they were going to enforce in a harsher manner the new criminal statute that the city council had proposed, because they didn't want people, they wanted New York to be able to get its tax dollars from the sale of these cigarettes. And so when they first showed up, there had been a report of an altercation, and that's why police showed up in the first place, because there was an altercation. And then they see Eric Garner there. And remember, all the people that got mad at the cops, who was it that actually passed the law that nobody got mad at? Who was it that passed the law that actually did the thing that made it to where they were demanding stronger police enforcement? Who was it? What? Because it wasn't the police. The police don't pass those laws. Do you think that the police wanted to pass laws for themselves that were forcing them to have to, in a more insane manner, police things like loose cigarettes? They didn't want to do that. In fact, you can see that's Juan was showing you on the simulcast there. That was the guy who was in the sock hat is Jordan Ely's dad. And then they have Eric Garner's mom and everybody's standing right there. So when police first got involved and they first showed up and they were engaging with Eric Garner, they were doing that on behalf of the tougher, stricter laws. And that was under Michael Bloomberg when he was still mayor. That's when all of that happened. Nobody was protesting the people at City Hall, the City Council. Nobody was doing that. No one was protesting them. And it was those were the ones who did that. So I bring that up because this idea that Daniel Penny, who is defending himself and others, is that Jordan Ely is the same as Eric Garner is stupid. I don't think Eric Garner should have been approached by cops in the first place. But that wasn't the cops' fault. That was the city council's fault. That was the local politician, Democrat politician's fault in New York City for demanding that there be these super strict, dumb laws about the sale of loose cigarettes so that Manhattan could get their tax money. That was something that city council did, not the cops. So Eric Garner, that's, you can't even compare him to Jordan Ely. Jordan Ely was an evil thug who targeted women and children. He was an absolute monster who targeted women and children. And if it wasn't going to be Daniel Penny, it was going to be someone else. Maybe, I don't know, all the people out there, they would have been happy if he would have followed through on his threats and murdered that mom and baby on the train, because those were the people that he was getting in their faces. He was getting in the faces of some other folks. Interestingly enough, when you read all of the witness accounts, it was all women that he was like really trying to target, because he sounds like a woman hater. This guy was a violent, evil thug. And I think violent, evil thugs, if the state of New York, if the city of Manhattan, if they're not going to do anything to protect the people, then by God, you got to allow people to protect themselves and each other. If you don't want vigilantism, then do your damn job. And this was all because Jordan Ely's grifting thug family abandoned him, had no idea what he was doing all, but they smell money. And they're all sniffing around like the grifters they are. Absolute trash humans. His whole family's trash. You're not even going to be around until what? Till he's dead? And now you're going to act all sad? I don't think so. This is one of the things that we're watching today. We got a lot more on this this verdict, especially now as, because he's acquitted. And I guess somebody had a change of heart over the weekend, because there was a little bit of concern that he wasn't going to be. I mean, they were going into 4 days of deliberations. So in addition to this, we also have Trump is in, he's been in France, and he was there for the reopening of the Notre Dame Cathedral. Because as you know, there was a huge fire that went through 2019, damaged a lot of stuff. They had to do this super comprehensive rebuild, and then they had it, this is the opening week, so a lot of fanfare, the opening week. So he was there. He met with Britain's Prince William. And they notice that Joe's not there. The White House sent Jill and Ashley. So they sent a drug addict who left her diary talking about her incestual showers with her dad in the flophouse mattress. And then they sent Jill Biden to go there to the opening of this cathedral, I guess, in place of Biden, who clearly would not have been. I mean, he hasn't been doing well. It was bad when he was in Africa. It was bad when he was in Brazil. He has not been doing well. So they sent them instead. Trump would, though, if you see him, do we have this video of him? I don't know if you want to say, is he shaking hands with Macron or is he arm wrestling with Emmanuel Macron? I mean, there's a difference there. He was meeting Emmanuel Macron, the French president. He was meeting with a number of other world leaders. They were treating him as though he is the de facto already president. You know, I mean, it's just the formality of the inauguration that remains. And so he shows up and he's meeting. This is when he's going in and he's going to be meeting with some of the world leaders. But they're already, I mean, they're treating it like a state visit. Kane, I wanted to ask you this. I was thinking about this. I don't remember a time when a president-elect was basically given the de facto, because this was not Jill Biden going on this red carpet. This is Trump on the red carpet. He's going to break Emmanuel Macron's hand here. So this is like the second or third time that this has happened, by the way. But, and I'll come back to that. Am I looking too far into it? Because I was thinking about this. I don't remember another world president-elect getting this kind of treatment like this. This normally would have been a function of the president. And Biden clearly is incapacitated. So Trump, they're just acting like the inauguration is a formality, right? That's what it seems like. I mean,
think about it. How many times has it happened to where the president that is currently president isn't the future president, but he was also a past president, right? So this 4 years in between Trump's two terms is a unique situation. So I think they're receiving him like a president in his second term. That's what it's looking like to me.
Also, Europe is a very different place than it was when Trump was elected in 2016, because you had Angela Merkel, who was considered the powerhouse in Europe, and then you saw her disastrous policies that led to this continued influx of illegal immigrants from Northern Africa into Europe, the rise of Islamism in Germany. A lot of bad stuff happened under Angela Merkel. She didn't want to pay just the minimum GDP into NATO because she wanted, I guess, the United States to treat Germany's defense as a welfare entity. This is pre-Brexit. Now a lot of things have changed. Like, Italy is no longer in chaos. You have strong conservative leadership there. You have growing conservative leadership in the European Union, since we have to get along with it and pretend that it's a viable entity for now. You have also a lot of more conservative leadership in Austria. You have the rise of conservatism in Spain. They've been destroying the Socialist Party there. You even have Emmanuel Macron's government's been thrown into chaos because of elections, etc. There. He lost a lot of footing. As conservative as the French can get, it's a lot different from very, very far left Macron. And then you even have Keir Starmer, who is, you know, albeit a socialist, ruling the as prime minister of the UK, but he's had to sit here and start blasting the open borders of the UK. And all because his party is taking a beating in the pollings. I mean, he's losing support dramatically. That's going to alter again the makeup of that of those political factions. So it is a very different Europe. Interesting. We got a lot to dive into because we've got this. We not only have latest domestically, but we got to talk about the issue of Syria and Lindsey Graham already beating the war drums. Of course, he is. But we're going to get into all of that, get you up to speed so you know who the players are in Syria, why the United States shouldn't be involved in it at all whatsoever, and then the implications that this has as the transition of Trump into the White House after Biden, what all that means coming up in January. So we have a lot to get into. And of course, plus the ongoing, we got our eyes on the reaction to the Daniel Penny verdict and the threats of rioting and all of that stuff. Black Rifle Coffee Company, look, I love their coffee because I'm really picky. Starbucks tastes horrible. A lot of the other coffee companies out there that say they roast their beans here in the USA, they don't. They get it from Canada or Brazil, and then they put a sticker on a pre-roasted bag, and then they sell it like it's fresh. Let's be real. Black Rifle Coffee doesn't do that. Veteran-owned, veteran-operated. They hire active duty and vets and retired. And they just do a really good job. And they're nerds about coffee. And I'm glad that they're nerds about coffee because I don't want to know how it's made. I just want it to taste good. And Black Rifle Coffee has so many amazing roasts. They have their Freedom Roast right now, which is totally what the Founding Fathers would have drank if Black Rifle Coffee like had anachronistically existed back in the times of our founders. They totally would have. You know, Washington would have had a cup a day. More. You can save 20% using code Dana at blackriflecoffee.com. Every sip of the Freedom Roast is a celebration of liberty and a tribute to those who fought for our awesome republic. You can subscribe to their coffee club, get your free shipping, automated orders sent straight to your doorstep, and never, ever, ever run out of your favorite coffee. No need for last-minute trips. And if you're stocked up on coffee, but you still need some Christmas ideas, they got whole bean, K-cups, ready-to-drink, apparel, kettles, grinders, mugs, and more. Their apparel is really popular, by the way, with the young dudes, too. So just an idea. So get your freedom on with the Freedom Roast. Check out the merch at blackriflecoffee.com and taste all their top-shelf roasts, like Just Black, Silence or Smooth, always a favorite. Whatever you decide, though, 20% off with code Dana. 20% off code Dana, blackriflecoffee.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Yes. All right, first up, our Christmas song. You got to start with Baby It's Cold Outside. You have to. Google is suing to stop the United States from monitoring it like a bank. Maybe it should be less evil. Isn't that their slogan? Literally, isn't it? The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, announced on Friday that it had placed Google Payment Corp under federal supervision. The company filed a lawsuit to block the bureau's order, which could result in routine inspections and monitoring them. Monitoring like those imposed on banks, on the banking industry. They found that Google's error resolution and fraud prevention processes pose risks to customers, citing customer complaints about the Google Pay balance and their peer-to-peer payments. And so they're going out. I'm not opposed. I mean, they should have to play like everybody else. You know, CNN had the lowest week in ratings in decades last week. The absolute lowest. Super low. And the age, that magical group, 25 to 54, it was the lowest number of viewers that they've had in almost 30 years. 30 years. They got about 260,000 viewers per day. How in the hell we get more listeners than that? We get millions of listeners a day. and we do know this factually, I am shocked that they get 260,000 viewers per day. This is at the end of November. How in the world are they open? They have a huge headquarters in Atlanta. How do they keep those doors open? How are you selling ads on that? Golly, that's the lowest ratings that they've had in 30 years. Burglars dressed as gardeners have been targeting San Bernardino homes, according to KTLA. They've been dressing up as lawn care experts, and then they get out and then they've been robbing people. A secret Pentagon study is hinting at reincarnation being real after finding that consciousness never dies. It's kind of an old study, and it's talking about like cellular life, but not the same thing. Stick with us. The thing that aggravates me is people are like, well, I just don't want to go into a gun-free zone. That's great. I would love to have that luxury. I don't. I have a job that requires me to go places where I can't always carry because, you know, I've got a roof to keep over my head and people to feed and, you know, bills to pay, just like everybody else. But I am not going to make myself defenseless. I am not one of those people who have any issue using lethal force, protecting themselves or their loved ones. And I will always encourage you to carry. I also think that you need to have a diversified array at your disposal so that you're ready for any type of situation. And this is where the Byrna gun comes in. It's a non-firearm firearm. It shoots chemical irritant projectiles that can disable threats from up to 50 feet away. And when you compare it to regular like stun guns, they have like one or two shots. Byrna SD, their most popular selling model, has five rounds. And it gives you a defensive option when the state or a private entity is trying to deny you of a force multiplier, a way to defend yourself. There's no background check. There's no waiting period. It's illegal in all 50 states, and they can ship it right to your front door. It also does not care about gun-free zone signs. So when your options of defense are limited, the Byrna gun is a great alternate choice. So check it out. You can visit Byrna.com/Dana. That's the only place where you can get 10% off. I mean, you can buy it elsewhere, but you're not going to get a 10% discount unless you go through Byrna.com/Dana. That's Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off.
The Dana Show Podcast, your fast, funny, and informative news companion for those always on the move. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With a new constitution, a new government that serves all Syrians, and this process will be determined by the Syrian people themselves. The United States will do whatever we can to support them, including through humanitarian relief to help restore Syria after more than a decade of war and generations of brutality by the Assad family.
Well, I don't even know what that means, and I don't think he does either. That was Joe Biden saying that he's going to send aid to the new regime to rebuild Syria. Well, who the hell is the new regime? I mean, we know the players in this, right? Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you here at the bottom of this first hour. And that's one of the things, obviously, that we have been watching happen over in the Middle East. The Arab League was trying to negotiate. That didn't, you know, that kind of fell apart. This has really been the worst, though, for the Ayatollah and the mullahs over in Iran. It's really been the worst for them and the worst for Russia, because you've had Bashar al-Assad, the, you know, described as a very brutalist leader of the regime for, you know, the past, couple of decades, was educated in London, married a British-born wife, goes back. He wasn't even supposed to lead Syria. His brother was. His brother's killed a car crash in Damascus. So they called him back. They basically put him through tyrant training. And then he ended up running Syria, and he was backed by Russia and Iran. Now, as long as things were stable for both Russia and Iran, the Assad regime in Syria had muscle, because that's who kept them in power. You know, the Russians sent military might, and the Iranians sent money. And of course, they had the assistance of Hezbollah and Hamas. But see, after Russia got itself mired in this four-year battle now with Ukraine, and then Iran decided to FAFO with Israel, and Israel's crushing Hamas in the south and crushing Hezbollah in the north and Lebanon, that really exposed Syria. It exposed the Assad regime's weak point, in that they were relying entirely on that trifecta. And that, but that was kind of Iran's goal, though. They wanted to create, in this mostly Sunni Arab world, the Persian, you know, Shiite Muslim population of Iran and going into Lebanon and going into Syria. They wanted to have this crescent of military might and muscle and control. They wanted to be the influential entity. And Iran really needed Syria. They used them for a lot of things. So, excuse me, still recovering from being under the weather, as I told you all last week. But now with Iran compromised and Russia compromised, who's going to be propping up Assad? And it's not like there are good choices here. Everyone's like, oh, Bashar al-Assad's a butcher. Have you seen the people coming in to Syria? You know they're terrorists, right? They're old terrorists. They're just a different type of terrorist. There's no regime to be throwing money at. I know Biden loves to throw cash at terrorists like, you know, his son at a strip club. But that's not how this works. They're still terrorists. They are. So I don't know. You're going to have something. I mean, nothing's going to change. You're going to have a more brutalist, perhaps, entity sweep through. I mean, not that Bashar al-Assad wasn't. There just aren't any good choices here. It doesn't help that you have Lindsey Graham. Good night. Lindsey Graham loves war drums, and he gets very excited about the prospect of, you know, showing off War Inc. And so he had, I'm not going to read this whole thing, this whole post at X, where he said he was talking about airstrikes against ISIS targets in Syria. That's not going to be enough. And he said that there's 50,000 ISIS prisoners in northeastern Syria that are held by Kurdish forces, and they can't be released. He said, we should not allow Kurdish forces who helped us destroy ISIS on Trump's watch be threatened by Turkey or the radical Islamists who have taken over Syria. And I think that's a legitimate point. Not that we need to do it, because where the hell's the Arab League? You know, if this is really ultimately a battle between Sunni and Shia, then Sunni and Shia, why are we involved? This is the Arab League that will handle this. If Sunnis want to control everything, then let them battle it out. If Shia want to push back, then let them battle it out. Now, I get the argument that the last time ISIS was in charge, and this was what Graham was saying, thousands of Europeans and Americans were killed by ISIS plots that originated in Syria. They don't want Syria to become a hotbed of whatever. Where have I heard this before? Oh, we've got to send our people over there so that we can weed out any terrorists and prevent that area from becoming a terrorist hotspot. From becoming a communist hotspot, they said, of Vietnam. From becoming a terrorist hotspot, they said, in South America. From becoming a terrorist hotspot, they said, in Iraq, 1, 2, and maybe 3. They said in Afghanistan. I mean, when does it stop? Yemen? Where do we stop? Right? When does it stop? I don't think that's working, is it? Also, how far tinfoil do you want me to go?
Just a little bit.
I am endlessly amused. Because I look at when Barack Obama was president. And this is, you know, back in 08, going all the way up into, you know, 2016. And it really seems as though this is a regime change similar to Libya. In a way. I'm not saying the people or the brutality is the same. But it has the hallmarks of that kind of flip. Like, it has the hallmarks of other entities being involved. Like, these other entities help kind of pin everything down until they could destabilize it. Interestingly enough, right, as Trump is going into office. Just saying. You know, keep it quiet while Obama doesn't do anything for, you know, 8 years. Keep it relatively, you know, kind of quiet, not really, you know, sort of, or at least not in the news under Biden. Oh, and then I'll just let it all pop off now that Trump's coming into office.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, I'm not going to pretend that we don't have any CIA assets or anything like that. If there's not some like CIA Mossad kind of joint venture over there. Come on. But let's look. These people are literally driving in with crappy AKs and Toyotas. All right. This is the same type of terrorist group like what the Taliban, when they were rolling through Afghanistan, getting towns to declare surrender via WhatsApp. This is not like it's a highly sophisticated venture. Okay. It's who can be the biggest terrorist thug? That's what it is. It's a competition. So I feel like And I've always felt like this about this region. I haven't really talked a ton about Syria just because it's been kind of ongoing and it does not, it's not related directly to U.S. interests. But they're trying to make it like that by, because they're going to try to say that Trump abandoned people in Syria, and they want to be able to have a narrative on a Republican president. I feel like after the narrative about Barack Obama abandoning the Iranians during the Green Revolution, remember all of that as it was following the Arab Spring? Just saying, it feels like that's what it, I'm just saying. It feels like that's what it's gearing up to. It feels like that. I mean, how? These, now all of a sudden, now you have this major shift. They said Assad's now in Moscow. He's been given, they brought him to Moscow, and he's in exile basically in Moscow now, he and his family. And I was reading that some Russian government officials told the Russian press that he got there Sunday. I don't know. I think he maybe gotten there sooner. So that means, that signals that he's not going to stay and fight it out. Of course, how is he going to? Russia's already abandoned it. They've already been pulling out whatever assets they have in Syria to help bolster what they're doing with Ukraine. Iran's like losing its mind because now they look like their regime looks very, very tenuous. You have the destruction of Hamas, the destruction of Hezbollah. You have Israeli tanks rolling through. They're not playing around. Imagine if they would have listened to the advice of Democrats in the United States and not done what they did with the assault against Hezbollah in the north. I doubt it would have been exposed as fast. I think that day was coming, but I doubt it would have been exposed as fast. But to go back to my point, excuse me, with Libya, because it very much reminds me of that. And I think that this, it's a kind of a regime change, but also, I mean, there isn't a good choice. And with Gaddafi, I think that there was less of a threat in keeping him there as opposed to Assad, because Assad is very important to the Shiite crescent of power. It's incredibly important to that. And now they're all reduced to just giving him asylum in Moscow. This is one of the things we're going to talk to Stephen Yates about, because this also implicates China. Now, China never really looked at Syria as though it was a very an important cog in the machine. But Syria was part of China's Belt and Road Initiative. And China was, they wanted to have that association, of course. They also are friendly with Russia. They're friendly with Iran. Now, think about it. You have the Shiite crescent of power, and they are trying to push back against the Sunni Muslim influence. It's interesting what this means for China as well. So, I don't know. I feel like this is, it just reminds me so much of all of that with Gaddafi. Now, you guys remember with Libya and Gaddafi, that was Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State. She really stepped in it. She is, for all of her ambition and certain things she is intelligent about, she was moronic about, either she was an idiot about geopolitical alliances in, you know, Egypt and Libya and Northern Africa, or she just did it because she was a chaos agent. She was a destabilizing factor. Because remember, when Egypt was having their election, she went in back, this was, what was this, like 2010, 2011, she went in and was backing the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, which had been exorcised from the country. They ran the Muslim Brotherhood out of Egypt. They looked at them as a terrorist entity. She helped ingratiate them back into Egypt very briefly before they were run out again. And you remember the Arab Spring. After Hillary Clinton's involvement, that's when all hell broke loose. And then, of course, you see the destabilization. And she has what was his name? Her friend, Blumenthal? Yeah. Sidney Blumenthal. He was the, he worked with the Clinton Foundation, Sidney Blumenthal. And he was one of many of her, of the Clintons' associates. He was, remember, he was accused of writing intelligence that he had sent to Hillary Clinton, etc. He got paid a lot He was a full-time employee of the Clinton Foundation. The New York Times had a story. This is like back in 2015. He turned over all his memos on Libya. He wanted to be there on the ground floor to undercut the Gaddafi regime, and he wanted to be part of instituting a new regime in Libya, and Clinton was going to have her fingerprints all over it, and it all blew up because they're morons, and they didn't realize how entrenched ISIS was. That was all... That was... The United States helped create that destabilization in Libya. Not that Syria isn't destabilized, but why in the hell are any Republicans talking about getting involved and backing a new regime? Why is Biden, why do Biden and Lindsey Graham sound the same on this? We got a lot to discuss though. We got Days of These United States coming up. Our partners at Kel-Tec, the P15, standard capacity, 15 rounds. I highly recommend the P15, especially if you're looking for a concealed carry striker fire pistol. This is from the inventors of the micro compact pistol category. Striker fire reliability. It is the P15, stands for 15 pews. Well, I mean, maybe not the pew part, but 15 rounds. It comes with two standard capacity magazines. One's a 15 round minimal pinky extension. The other's a flush fit double stack mag that holds 12 rounds. It's 1.27 inches approximately wide, 4-inch barrel, lifetime warranty, tritium and fiber optic front sight, fully adjustable fiber optic 2-dot rear as well. And the metal version comes with these gorgeous walnut panels. The polymer version, gator grip texture, lightest, thinnest, double stack 9mm on the market, hands down. Lighter and thinner than my 43X. Packs a punch without dragging you down, without compromising stopping power or concealability. It's a great, great offer from Kel-Tec, and you need to check it out. P15 in time for Christmas. Innovation, performance, and Kel-Tec. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. KELTECweapons.com. It's the P15. Tell them Dana sent you.
Get the lowdown on the latest news with a side of laughs whenever you want. Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Well, hey everybody, it's Friday all day, as my Nana would say. And look what I have on my lip. Everybody's been saying, you have herpes all this time, and I never had a cold sore in my life. And now I have a cold sore. And it makes me think that perhaps this weird pimple that had a tiny little head was a cold sore too. And so I talked to my doctor today, and I did a video telehealth. And they said that it's not a cold sore, it's some reaction to the sun. Now, I did sit in the sun yesterday, but I had sunscreen on. So I don't know. I will let you know tomorrow if I do, in fact, have herpes.
Who cares? Who does this stuff? You see the sore on my mouth? Does it look like a herpes?
You'll let us know tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going to let you know tomorrow. I'm going to herpes watch. Who does this kind of stuff? She's so weird. I cannot... This is not what... You know what? The internet... This is not what it was made for. It really, I mean, maybe in your neck of the woods, you know, you want to do that. That's, I don't know. I just, that's so, who does that? That's so nasty. That's so nasty. You don't have to just, well, I sat in the sun yesterday. Like, does she just not have anything to do in life anymore? That she just does, she just random, like, oversharing. Everybody has. You guys know you all have like that grandma or that great aunt or aunt, your auntie in your family, the oversharing auntie. You guys know exactly what I'm talking about because y'all have one. Y'all know, right? You all know. I had a, oh gosh, this is going to take everything I have. So I had a family member, God rest her soul. Her big thing was offering Imodium to everyone at like family events, right? Like, because she thought it was a healthy part of colon. I don't know. It's the weirdest thing. Like, she would try to ascertain if you were on the reg. You know what I mean? And then she would either offer you Imodium or whatever, Colace or whatever the thing that she was on. Oh, my gosh. Just had no problem going up to cousins. If a cousin brought a girlfriend or a boyfriend, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, you're here at the table too. We're going to ask you, you know, going to ask you about your Colace habits. Do you need any? I'm like, why? Who does this? Rosie O'Donnell's that person. All right. So we have more from our Christmified set. I'm in blue today. It's rare. Make sure you tune in. Keep tuning in. Next hour on the way. Life can take a toll on our bodies. There's no way around it. And whether it's just sitting for hours on end at your computer or if you're working a physical job, over time, your body pays the price. There is, however, an effective way to turn back the clock on pain. Relief Factor. Developed by doctors, Relief Factor helps support your body's response to inflammation. And the difference, instead of just masking pain, Relief Factor helps eliminate it for good, and it's 100% drug-free. My husband Chris has taken Relief Factor with incredible results. So if the pains that come with living a full life are affecting you, do as many others have done and turn back the clock on pain with Relief Factor. Their three-week quick start is just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. And when you feel good, it's amazing how much more you get out of life. Visit relieffactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800-4-RELIEF. Try it for only $19.95 and turn back the clock on pain with Relief Factor. Relieffactor.com. Oh, I thought we were welcome. We got this video I wanted to play for you. That's BLM. If we can pull this up, I have it actually on Twitter. If you could get my audio up. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you at the top of the second hour. I have this. I'm going to get this going for you. This is some of the audio from Hawk Newsom, the guy who founded BLM of Greater New York. And he's calling. He's listening to his threats. He's calling for vigilantism in this audio.
Vigilantes.
Wow.
Right.
Oh, okay. I was, if you guys can't hear that, this is Hawk Newsom. He founded this. If we can get this audio, he founded this.
When they attempt to
BLM of Greater New York. And,
vigilantes.
That's right.
You can hear some of this audio here.
People want to jump up and choke us and kill us for being loud? How about we do the same when they attempt to oppress us?
Right.
I'm tired. We need some black vigilance.
So this is just one of the examples of BLM now demanding that, apparently, I guess, as some kind of payment for Daniel Penny being found not guilty, that now he's calling for a race war. He said, quote, people want to jump up and choke us and kill us for being loud. How about we do the same? We need some black vigilantes. First off, and again, welcome back to the program, Dana Lash with you. That's not what happened with the situation of Jordan Neely. Why are they lying about and omitting that he was threatening to kill people on that subway platform? Why is Hawk Newsom, who sounds like the name of a Jeremy Clarkson beer, why is he pretending that Jordan Neely wasn't getting in the faces of women and their children and elderly people and anyone else on that subway platform and threatening to kill them and becoming more and more irate and getting closer and closer to them? That wasn't just Jordan Neely being loud and or asking for food. That was Jordan Neely, who by every black and white witness that was on that subway platform said, yes, he absolutely was threatening to kill people. That's what they testified to. He was threatening to kill people. So Hawk Newsom believes that Jordan Neely should be free to kill people, punch elderly women in the face, shove women under train tracks, and try to kidnap 7-year-olds because he's black. That's what Hawk Newsom believes. Hawk Newsom believes that if your skin color should determine whether or not you can just assault and threaten to murder people and maybe even murder people, why the hell not? He thinks that apparently that's a right to a specific skin color in the United States. As though this would have happened any differently if Jordan Neely was white. Because Hawk Newsom is a thug racist. He's an absolute racist. That's why. He is just, I mean, that's exactly what he is. That's just, I'm like, good golly, it's 2024. You think that Jordan Neely would have, what do you think they would, I cannot believe that anyone in their right mind would think that if Jordan Neely were white, that would have been acceptable. Oh, did you hear that man who was threatening to murder people and he got in the face of the woman and she's trying to protect her baby in a stroller and he's threatening to kill her? Well, was he white? Yeah. Oh, that's all right then. Really? I mean, that says more about those people than it does about the people they're making the assumption about. And now this claim that, well, you know, they're just, they, he got killed because he asked for some food, or he got killed just because he was loud. No, that's not what happened at all. These people weren't there. The witnesses who testified were. They're rewriting this to try to make Jordan Neely some sort of hero, some sort of innocent. Daniel Penny was forced into the position that he was forced into. He was forced to use skills that he had learned as a veteran because of New York City. New York's lawlessness and disorder forced him into this position. It forced the people on that subway to cower in fear. It allowed Jordan Neely to freely threaten people until the point at which somebody had to do something because someone was going to get hurt. Where's the concern of this family for the woman that Jordan Neely punched in the face and broke her nose, the elderly woman? Because that, he had a warrant out for his arrest, by the way, at the time of his death. Before that, was he, what did she do to get her face punched in? I noticed that the family, all these grifters who just decide to just show up, they didn't have a press conference for that woman. Can't a woman ride a subway in New York without getting punched in the face? People want to jump up and punch elderly women? What did she do? Did she ask for food? Did she ask, was she loud? Or what about the 7-year-old that Jordan Neely was on video trying to drag down an alley? What did that 7-year-old do? Where's the family and all these grifting racist hustlers out there? Where are they all at? What did that 7-year-old do? Or what about the woman he tried shoving onto the train tracks? What did she do? I mean, how long do women have to take abuse from people like Jordan Neely before people, grifting racist hustlers like wannabe Al Sharpton, Hawk Newsom, before they finally come to the realization that, okay, well, I guess, you know, I guess we're even now? Who allowed you to determine that these people and abusing these people was the way to make yourself feel equal or validated? I mean, this was an issue of self-defense. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, this when does Hawk Newsom not incite a riot? When does he go out there and try to not incite riots? Everybody wants to be the next Al Sharpton. We already had one Al Sharpton. We don't need another. We don't need another no good, doesn't do anything for the community hustler. We don't need anybody else like that. And that's exactly what he is. He has provided nothing of value except he is a hustler, a race hustler. He doesn't even offer product. Good night. I mean, what? Was this supposed to end differently if Jordan Neely was white? You think it came? Would this have ended differently if Jordan Neely was white?
No, you mean as far as someone actually dying?
I think he would have gotten his ass beaten sooner, honestly.
Maybe.
I really do think he would have.
I do know the media would have definitely treated it differently.
I think the only reason that Daniel Penny waited so long was because Jordan Neely was black. Because everyone knows that you got Hawk Newsoms out there who are going to blow this up. It's so damn predictable. Good night. It's so predictable. No, if Jordan Neely was white, he would have gotten his ass beaten faster. And he probably would have gotten his ass whooped. This was just Daniel Penny restraining a violent, and with a violent record, thug, who apparently grifters feel should be getting given a pass because he's black. And then this family that comes up. Man, now you know why Jordan Neely was the way he was. Look at his family. Look at his dad coming up there. I miss my son. You deadbeat SOB. When were you even around him? You know, these records are public, right? Y'all, everybody knows he gave him up, right? He had nothing to do with him. Oh, he smells money. He's going to come out there to the press conference. Oh, I miss my dead gay son. He's going to come out there. Heather's quote. He's going to come out there to the press conference. Show up, make everybody feel sorry for him. Maybe they'll dry his tears with some hundreds. trash. These people are trash. Daniel Penny deserved this justice. He absolutely deserved it. We got this. Do we have audio of do we have audio yet of the dad at the press conference? We were talking about that. Yeah, let's play that. We're talking about this last hour. And this is his dad at the press conference.
Say, I miss my son. My son didn't have to go through this. I didn't have to go through this either. It hurts. Really, really hurts. What are we going to do, people? What's going to happen to us now? I had enough of this. The system is rigged.
Mm-hmm.
The system's rigged.
Come on, people.
Oh, man, especially a man of color.
Let's do something about this.
Should be able to threaten people. Let's do something about it. What do you mean? You know what? That's something that should have been done about this was your grifting welfare ass being there to raise your son. That's when something should have been done about this, Dad. You should have been a man and you should have stood up and raised your son. You should have been there for your child, Dad. That's when something should have been done. You know when something should have been done, Dad? Right when he first started being violent, Dad. That's when you should have been there, Dad. You don't get to, when you've been MIA his whole life, go, oh, I'm tired of this. You didn't do nothing to be tired of, you lazy grifter thug. You didn't even do anything to be tired about. And now you want to throw the whole city into chaos and drag the country with it? Because you all abandoned your son? You deadbeat? With your deadbeat mom and the deadbeat family and the deadbeat friends? I didn't see any of them people around. Oh, he was asking for food. Where were you at? Your son was out there asking for food then on the subway. Where were you, Dad? Where were you at? Where was Mom? Where were the uncles and the aunts? Where were they at? The cousins, the family, the friends. Where were... Oh, no. Oh, but they're all there with hand out. Wanting a settlement. They're all there, hands out, wanting some cash. For what? Because they happen to be, in their minds, fortuitously related to Jordan Neely, but they weren't there for his life. No, what needed to be done, you missed the boat, Dad. You missed it multiple times throughout his life. So you don't get to come out now and be like, I don't even think he misses him. He didn't even sound sad. Of course, how could he be? He had no relationship with him. He didn't even know him. He just shows up in the aftermath. Hell, are they even sure it's his dad? Does anybody know? This deserves ridicule. You know why it deserves ridicule? Because there's another man who did the right thing. And he stepped up. And he was vilified for it. Thankfully, those witnesses, they were all in fear of their lives. They told the truth about what happened. Black and white. That's the other thing. All these race grifters out there, do you realize the number of black innocent subway passengers who were testifying? They were scared too. Do you think Jordan Neely was drawing a distinction between black and white when he was targeting and threatening people? No, he wasn't. You excuse this by acting like he was, or by acting like he was the victim of some kind of like racial animus. He wasn't. There were black passengers on that subway who thought they were terrified too. He was threatening them also. It is evil and soulless to make this about race. You are endorsing random violence against people by doing so. I hope people see through this. I really hope that they do. Every Democrats desperately need something as a starter to light the fire and cause massive destabilization going into January. That's their MO every single time. And they're hoping this is it. It's infuriating. I'm glad justice was prevailed. Actually, you know what? This wasn't even justice. This never should have been into court in the first place. Daniel Penny never should have been charged, ever. We got a lot more on the way. If you're looking for a convenient, affordable way to access medications and treatments you can trust, All Family Pharmacy has you covered. Whether it's the flu or parasites, cancer support, or general well-being, All Family Pharmacy's online service makes getting the medications you need hassle-free. With All Family, it's simple. You can choose the individual medications that best suit your needs or opt for one of their comprehensive treatment packages designed to give you everything that you need in one convenient order. And every order comes with a doctor's prescription included. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, or any other effective medications, they have it all. And you can get fast shipping with most orders shipping in 2 to 3 business days. Medications start as low as $3 per capsule, making it really easy to take charge of your health without breaking the bank. No insurance needed. You can skip the paperwork and get the treatments you need directly. Stock up with their emergency preparedness bundles and access over 200 medications online anytime. Visit allfamilypharma.com/Dana and use code Dana10 for 10% off of your entire order. That's allfamilypharma.com/Dana, code Dana10.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
You guys remember Fat Joe? So Fat Joe at one point weighed like 500 pounds. Apparently, he's lost over 200 pounds. He said he did so on Ozempic because he has apparently, I guess he deals with diabetes. He's just Joe now. He's not Fat Joe anymore. Dude, he's just Joe. What? I'm not saying this to be mean. His head's still the same size. It is. Don't be like a lollipop. Don't be like them Hollywood starlets, though, Joe, where they lose all their weight and then they got their head, regular size head, on their little thin, skinny body. So don't be like that. Don't get thin and skinny. Nobody wants that. Yeah, gosh, he just looks like he could blow him over just by blowing at him. He falls over. I don't know. Anyway, I had to share that because I was shocked when I saw that. Shooketh. Let's see. Traffic chaos is caused by 30 pounds of melted chocolate on a Bay Area highway. Oh, man. Ooh, that looks really bad. The photos look really bad. This big rig was carrying chocolate in East Bay. Caught fire Friday morning. Tons of chaos. They said it was 6:18 a.m., so right during rush hour, you know. And it was a mechanical issue. At first, set the truck's brakes on fire. Then it spread to the rest of the truck. Can I just say that I bet it smelled real good? You know, that whole area smelled like melted chocolate. Do you think anybody tried to, like, I don't know, touch a marshmallow and some graham cracker up on that? I'm just asking because you know y'all thought it. Young men are making risky bets on crypto and politics and raking it in right now. Well, this is the time when you're young. It's to be risky with stuff like that. That's the time to do it. So, this, I don't know. Nissan has slashed U.S. production as bankruptcy looms. Yeah, maybe don't be all dumb about EVs and you won't have to worry about that. We got a lot more on the way. Trump and DACA next. Our partners over at Preborn, a great organization that helps women make the choice of life when they are faced with an unexpected or unplanned pregnancy. And when a woman hears, when a mother hears her baby's heartbeat, sees the ultrasound, the baby's chance at life doubles. And so you can save a life this Christmas. It starts at just $28. And when you donate $28 to Preborn, you're supporting women and babies in need, providing vital care and resources. And you can even consider making a larger life-changing donation as well. You can save countless babies, maximize your end-of-year tax deduction. And right now, they're doubling donations with a special matching grant. So your donation goes twice as far. And Preborn, they are a great, trustworthy organization. Your contributions, it's tax deductible. They have, you know, the top rating where it concerns charitable organizations. So you can trust that your money's going exactly where they say that it's going. I mean, they got the proof is in the pudding. I mean, you can see they talk about and you even can meet some of these women that receive these ultrasounds because they make a huge life-changing decision. It's so easy to donate. So easy. You just dial pound or, you know, hashtag 250 and you say the keyword baby. That's it. And you're donating to Preborn that simply. You can also visit preborn.com/Dana to donate. Every contribution counts. It doesn't matter how big, doesn't matter how small. You could be buying an ultrasound for a mother today. You could be putting an ultrasound machine in a Preborn clinic tomorrow. Just dial #250, say the keyword baby. You can also donate securely at preborn.com/Dana.
Keep your finger on the pulse with the Dana Show podcast, delivering timely news with insightful analysis whenever you want, straight to you on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The dreamers are going to come later, and we have to do something about the dreamers, because these are people that have been brought here at a very young age, and many of these are middle-aged people now. They don't even speak the language of their country. And yes, we're going to do something about the dreamers.
What does that mean?
And
what are you going to do?
I will work with the Democrats on a plan. And if we can come up with a plan, but the Democrats have made it very, very difficult to do anything. Republicans are very open to the dreamers. The dreamers, we're talking many years ago, they were brought into this country. Many years ago. Some of them are no longer young people. And in many cases, they become successful. They have great jobs. In some cases, they have small businesses. Some cases, they might have large businesses. And we're going to have to do something with them. And
you want them to be able to stay. That's what you're
not addressing. If they're able to create businesses and make successes, why the hell could they not file for citizenship on top of it? Especially with the implementation of DACA, they were prevented from deportation for a good long period. So if they were doing so. So that doesn't answer the question. It doesn't solve the problem. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you at the bottom of this second hour. That's what's being missed here. I mean, if you're able, no one's faulting people for being children and drug across the border against their own free will by their parents or whatever. But that's where that stops. There is culpability when you, as an adult, you're... If you can create a business and you can go through the process of licensing and getting capital, doing all of this stuff, going to, you know, filling out paperwork to go to college, really doing anything, you sure as hell can start the process of becoming a legal citizen in this country. You absolutely can, especially when you were prevented from being deported by ICE because of the DACA allowances already. So that doesn't make any sense. It's still rewarding bad behavior. And that's not why people voted the way that they did, by the way. People did not vote for that. That's not what they voted for. So in absence of recognizing that if you are in the country illegally, you're brought here as a kid, and then you try to rectify that as you start a business and all that stuff, and you were protected under Barack Obama and Joe Biden with DACA. You were prevented from, they couldn't deport you. In absence of recognition of that, this is not a solution. This is just a Democrat talking point. That's what it is. And you can get mad about it if you want to, but I'm not the one saying the Democrat talking point. I'm pointing it out. That's not what we voted for. I did not vote for that. I did not vote for that. I don't want no bait and switch here. Do not George H.W. Bush me on this. I don't want a bait and switch. Don't want it. Oh, yeah. No, read my lips. No new taxes. Read my lips. We're going to deport everyone. No, we're not doing that. You do it. Follow through. And it is realistic. If you have not started the process, then you're, that's an act of criminality. And at some point, you are responsible for your own actions, regardless of how you got here. You were allowed to stay here because the assumption, and this is one of the reasons why DACA was so dumb, the assumption was that you were going to be starting the process to be a citizen. And if you didn't do it, then that's on you. So why are we rewarding that? That's a basic question, is it not? I mean, doing something like this, you know, Reagan's, and look, I like Reagan. Everybody likes Reagan. I can say things about the record of President Ronald Reagan that does not diminish my like of him. I like him. I mean, I disagreed with his gun control. I mean, we got gun control to Reagan, and we got one of the largest, 3 million some odd sweeping amnesty under Reagan. I don't want to see that repeated here. There has to be some kind of accountability. And that's really ultimately what it is. I don't know why that caveat cannot be attached. Why Republicans are so scared. This sounds, I mean, I'm aggravated because I feel like already here we are, not even in January, and we already got this coming in. Can I remind you that for all the talk, I think all the people saying that Republicans won this election by a landslide, these people have never paid attention in politics. They got they got a quick ascension because they say red meat things that everyone else says on TikTok or on X or wherever. And they actually don't have any deep insight. They just kind of like regurgitate what other people say. They have not paid attention to turnout in elections. They have not paid attention to trends. All that stuff matters. We legit had the same turnout that we did in 2020. What made it seem like it was a massive turnout is that Democrats didn't come out to vote. I mean, they weren't going to go out and vote for Kamala Harris. They didn't vote for anybody. They didn't come out. It made it seem like it was this huge sweeping thing for us. And my telling you that means we didn't solve these problems. We didn't solve the problems. It was the same turnout in 2020. Not much different from 2016. So you still had a lot of Republicans that didn't vote. It just happened that more Democrats did not vote this time. And that's what contributed to the victory. Now, I'm not saying that to undermine or be mean. And I don't need people who don't pay attention to this stuff. Like, why are you so ignorant anyway? I'm telling you this because do you want to keep risking it in the future? I mean, if there are people out there who value their ego and being able to flex on X more than they actually do about contributing to anything in meat space, then they can go ahead and they can sit and spin on my remarks there. But I'm telling you this because we haven't solved the problem. And you're not going to solve the problem by weakening yourself on immigration after election. People voted for something very, very specific. I don't want to have another election where the victory is hinged upon Democrats not being enthused and not turning out. My gosh, we cannot do that. We've got to get our people out and we have to have good policy that we can point to as reason for their continued support. That's what it's all about. So I don't like what I'm hearing from him on this. Because again, it ignores the fact that you have people who are now grown, they know better, and they're choosing to still not follow the law anyway. How is that any different at that point? Because they're assuming the criminal offense. They're not inheriting a criminal offense. They were protected under previous DACA accommodations, and then they have thus far declined to start the process to become legal citizens. So at some point, the responsibility transfers to them because they are the ones who could do something about it, were expected to do something about it, and chose to not do something about it. Are we not the party of accountability? Because again, I just want to know if what I voted for on Tuesday is what I actually, or on November, is what I voted for or not. And I think it's a fair question to ask. I need everyone to remember, you don't owe your allegiance to anyone except yourself. You're the voter. You're the one who people should be pledging fealty to, not the other way around. I guess some of us are just way too American to tolerate that kind of spin. So people need to deliver for you. You voted. You were the ones who had your characters impugned, and you don't have millions of dollars to cry into. You had your characters impugned. You had your businesses closed. Your family's targeted. You're the one who is owed. When you vote, you expect a return on the investment of that vote. Do not sell yourself short because you're worth more than that. So I don't know what I don't know what this is. I will say I do like that he's outright refusing any kind of involvement in Syria. And we're going to talk about this more with our friend Stephen Yates here coming up next hour, because it is the Syria issue. It's not something the United States needs to be involved in. I mean, not at all. No reason as to why. But you have people like Lindsey Graham and others that are very, very excited. And they think that, oh, here's something. But one of the other big points that I see being missed is the destabilization this has caused to Iran. I think after October 7th, Iran did not count on Israel fully eschewing all of the, I don't want to call it advice, lectures, I guess, that it was receiving from so many other nations about, oh, well, you can't react and you can't do this and you can't do that. They weren't expecting the kind of pushback they got with against Hezbollah. They were not. And now, I mean, one of the reasons that Iran was able to supply Hezbollah so easy was because Syria under Assad allowed it. That's part of that Shiite crescent, the power struggle in the Muslim world. The Arab League had been working in negotiations, but they'd been in a stalemate for I don't know how long in Syria, for quite a long time. And Israel overpowers Hezbollah, completely knocks Iran back. And now they've lost Syria and the cover that Syria provided. I'm just saying, they used to have a direct path to their proxy militias. Now they don't. I mean, you had up until what the end of last month, you had Assad and Hezbollah that were still controlling parts of Syria. Now they don't. And now the Iranians are left out just completely unsupported. Very interesting. And it's a very huge shift in the power dynamic in the Middle East. And this is something that Netanyahu had noted. Reuters has the story of how when he was in Golan Heights and he was speaking about the collapse of the Assad regime. And he noted that, well, part of this was due to the defeat of Hezbollah in the north. And reemphasized that Israel will protect its borders. Iran did not, they gambled wrongly. They really, really underestimated. Can you imagine, again, back to the point that the question that I asked first hour, can you imagine if Israel had listened to Western leaders about what it should do? Oh, don't be so hard on Hezbollah. Well, there's a reason they were working with the Assad regime. There's no good choice in Syria. But the idea that the rebels coming in are somehow some sort of saints, they're terrorists. They're literal, actual terrorists. The only thing to kind of get excited about is that the mullahs in Iran are totally destabilized now. So when will the people of Iran take a second running at maybe another Arab Spring? Remember the first time that happened, they had there were Iranian guard up there on the rooftops sniping people. We'll see. Hamas, and there's a change with Hamas too. So apparently, where's the story that I had? So apparently, one of the things with Hamas is that they were getting notes and taking inventory, for the lack of a better way to put it, of the hostages that they have to be able to use them in any kind of negotiation. And apparently some of the previous requirements that they had, including like Israel stopping all, ceasing all responses, which they call hostilities, responses, etc., they're dropping some of those. Because I think they're realizing now how dire the situation is for them. I mean, they've been utterly decimated in the south. Hezbollah is decimated in the north. So now Hamas is demanding that, well, they need Israel to stop any offensive so that they can get information on these hostages. And they're trying to ascertain how many that they have in custody, etc. And I think Hamas is realizing, okay, it's over. It's already over. It's done for this part. And Israel pushing back so hard on Hezbollah, just that was like kicking out that table leg, that third leg out from underneath Assad in Syria and Iran. And now it's destabilized, that they were trying, that little crescent that they were trying to build is just all falling down. We're going to talk more about that with Stephen Yates coming up. We also have the latest with the Daniel Penny verdict, because I don't know. I'm just wondering if it's going to be a peaceful night tonight in New York. Good folks who help bring you the program. It's our friends over at Patriot Mobile. It's the only Christian conservative cell phone service that is in the nation. And with Patriot Mobile, you're not going to you're not funding the stuff with which you disagree, right? You're not funding things like DEI, and you're not funding things like gun control or trans anything. You're funding really the stuff you're putting momentum behind, the stuff that you believe in, because Patriot Mobile works with pro-life groups, Second Amendment groups, free speech groups, anti-DEI groups. They gave a lot of momentum to our parents who were taking over our school board here in the town in which I live. But the other cool thing is that you're not going to pay an arm and a leg for your cell phone service. They have affordable plans for everyone. They can tailor make it to you, whether you're single, a business, a dink, dual income, no kids, no matter what it is. Patriot Mobile has something to offer, and they have a plan for you. And you can also do seamless switching with their Every Friday Matters special. You get a brand new smartphone when you make the switch. Now, that's a limited time offer, and it's only while supplies last. So I would take advantage of that pretty quickly, and you're supporting their U.S.-based customer team. Free smartphone offer eligible only with promo code Friday. It's a limited time offer. Terms and conditions apply. Make the switch today. Get a free smartphone. Make the switch. PatriotMobile.com/Dana.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So when I first read that this Florida man had decorated his yard with the lamp from A Christmas Story, I thought, well, how big could it be? You'd be surprised. J.P. McCallick's suburban Jacksonville, Florida home. It's 20 feet tall. And it even includes a replica of Ralphie hugging the lamp wearing his pink bunny suit. It doesn't, is it an inflatable? Because it really doesn't even look like it's an inflatable. But he goes, I like his response. He goes, quote, everyone's decorating their houses and I thought it'd be fun to have like a neighborhood competition. And so he just decided to put that up. He it's crazy. He does not have what I would call traditional decorations. But that's funny. So he's got the giant leg lamp in his yard. I kind of like that, though. I've been wanting to get a giant nativity and put in my yard, but I want a giant nativity, like a huge one. Yeah. Some people in my household don't share my vision.
With real people?
I mean, no, but, you know, if it's offered, you know. I want, like, resin, right? We got to save this for later because I got more. Hang on. I got more to get into. Let's see. Oh my gosh, listen to this. A Florida man says Delta Airlines burned his golf bag and clubs worth nearly $4,000. Ooh, and it looks real bad too. I'm looking at the destruction of it. He said that his golf bag was burned and everything was charred. Oh. I don't even know how you burn, because golf clubs are, what are they, metal? Aluminum? Yeah. He was, this is in October. He was on a flight from Atlanta. He was waiting for his luggage at the Southwest Florida International Airport. And then he said when he saw it come around again, he goes, wait, oh my gosh, those are my clubs. The freight guy said that they dragged it and it wore through the protective covering, started to spark, and then it caught everything on fire. So he's filed a claim with Delta. Delta initially denied the claim. And finally they said that they're going to pay for it. But it was like, it looks bad. How do you drag them and then spark? That's like just negligence. That's just laziness and negligence. I don't know how else you attribute that. Look, I was showing you the photo. Look at that. That's crazy. That's what they look like. That's insane. Oh, my gosh. Let's see. Last but not least, a half-naked Florida man. I may have to share this for tomorrow. High on meth, broke into a home, only to steal the resident's carpet cleaner. I'll share that one tomorrow. Third hour next. Welcome to the program. Top of our third hour. Dana Lash here with you this Monday. You can find us, the chats at Rumble. You can find us also at X and Channel 347, DirecTV, all kinds of good stuff. This, a few things. They've ID'd the killer of the United Healthcare CEO, Luigi Mangione, an ex Ivy League student. He is the person who's been identified, and he apparently liked quotes from the Unabomber online. I don't know what all that means, but you know, if it means that he liked them or he shared them or whatever it was. So that's the they're still, if they're releasing his name though, they must have him like pretty much almost in custody, I would think, right? Because at first they didn't want to share anything about him because they didn't want to tip him off or make him feel as though he was, they were on to him. So this individual, I mean, he was able to elude that, which is crazy because it was in Manhattan, of all the places in Manhattan, and he was able to elude that long. So that, wow. So this individual, and Luigi Mangione is his name, and he was apparently went to, had an Ivy League education. He is, and this, of course, is about the UnitedHealthcare CEO, Brian Thompson. He's described as an anti-capitalist, I guess because of some of the stuff that was on his social media profile. He's 26 years old. He was taken into custody at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. So technically, he's not arrested yet. He's taken into custody. He was caught with a firearm, a silencer, four fake IDs with names that he used during his time in New York City, and a manifesto, which railed against the U.S. healthcare industry, per the Post, and including its profits and motives and all this stuff. And apparently, authorities said that he had maybe a reason to be angry at the insurance companies because he had apparently a sick relative or something like that. And he once worked in an assisted living facility when he was in high school still. But there's a certain, but they have photos of him, and they got him in the back of the cruiser. And he subscribed to climate change. He was a climate change believer. He was an anti-capitalist. And he liked, apparently he liked Ted Kaczynski, Unabomber quotes. I don't know. Just wild stuff. But he was found, 5 hours away from New York City in Altoona, Pennsylvania. It was like a 5-hour drive. He apparently was smart. He went and had a very bougie upbringing, an all-boys school, $40,000 a year for his high school tuition. That's bougie. That's a college education. He was going to go into AI, and so it had, and just wild. And he was right there in Manhattan when all this happened and did it and was able to go this far. So that's the latest with the healthcare, the UnitedHealthcare CEO shooting. We also had the verdict in the Daniel Penny case. Lorraine has a piece up at Substack where you can go and read all of the latest in that case, the verdict, because he's not guilty. And we'll see if there's going to be riots or anything like that. The father was out there saying, oh, I miss my son and all this. The father had abandoned him to foster care, gave him up to the state. And apparently once when Jordan Neely was a teenager, he wanted to live with his father. And his father was trying to shake him down for his street performance money. And when Neely wouldn't give it to his father, Andre Zachary, then Zachary would not allow him to live with him. And that was it. I mean, just it's a mess. But I'm actually kind of surprised. I feel like I'm surprised because it was in New York. And I couldn't be sure, even though I don't even think that Penny should have been charged, I couldn't be sure of a not guilty verdict, not because there was a question of Penny's innocence, but it's New York. I mean, we've seen some of the cases that have been coming out of New York, right? I mean, it's been pretty, when we've seen it. So I wasn't quite sure how that was gonna roll out. But thankfully, there was some justice in that case. We also have Trump, who was at who was in France at the reopening of the Notre Dame. Can we get, I have this audio. I'm pulling up my, this clip, audio soundbite 13. It's the handshake off, the handshake battle, as it's called, between Trump and Emmanuel Macron. Why do they shake hands like this with each other? I can't tell if they're like joking around or if Trump is trying to rip his arm off and beat him with it. I don't know, but Macron is shorter, and as you see in the video, he's shorter, and Trump grabs his hand like he's pulling him in, and like trying to rip his arm off. It's the wildest thing. But he was there, also pictured sitting by Jill Biden, Ashley Biden, at the reopening of this, and Brigitte Macron, Emmanuel Macron. They were all there. We had video of it, but I don't think we're able to play it just yet. So moving on, the few other things that we've been hitting too with this, the way that he was received, it's like a state visit. It's like he is the de facto president of the United States, even though he's president-elect. Jill Biden did not get the same treatment that Donald Trump did. They didn't roll out the red carpet for Jill Biden. Jill Biden was there with Ashley Biden, and they were just sort of treated as it was like they were an afterthought. Trump is president, and it's all but a formality at this point. The inauguration's the formality. And it was very interesting to see, and as I made mention of, it's a very different Europe, too. A very different Europe. And you don't have some of the... I think originally in the beginning when Trump was first elected, that he... Well, they sort of thought he was... They made fun of him. They thought he was kind of... Even though he was a successful business person, it feels like they thought he was gauche, right? They thought he was kind of like, oh, you loud American, etc. And they kind of were snotty. They're not snotty about that anymore. They really seem to actually like him. It is the wildest. They seem to like him. And, I mean, it feels like there's representation for the United States on the world stage again, doesn't it? Biden was kind of like a non-entity, really. A few other things to hit. We got a lot of audio sound bites. I want to make sure that we get as well. In the UK, audio sound bite 32, you will be arrested and thrown in jail for posting criticism of mass immigration grooming gangs or offending trans people on social media. So the grooming gangs, like what they saw in Rotherham, where they had girls who were being preyed on by people who were coming into the country illegally. Listen to this, because police actually visited someone because they didn't like what they posted on Facebook. Audio somebody 32.
The time's 20:03, 14:40. I'm arresting you on suspicion of improper use of the electronic communications network.
Under what?
127 of the Communications Act, okay? So you do not have to say anything that may harm your defence if you don't mention one question, something which you later rely on court. Anything you do say may be given evidence. Do you understand that?
So I'm actually being arrested?
You're going to be arrested, okay?
Right.
So you got to the police station.
Right.
You, okay, this is in relation to some comments that you've made on a Facebook page.
Okay? Oh, really? Oh, it's a Facebook crime, is it?
Okay.
Right.
So we need to ask you some questions about that.
Right.
Have you got anything in your pockets?
On Facebook.
I've got my keys. No, I spade it, I think. Keys.
So, anyone who's been arrested, we can search them under Section 32 of the Police and Benevolence Act.
Right.
That's for dangerous items.
You said I was going to be arrested under some what information? I'm going to be arrested for posting on Facebook.
Made some comments that are offensive, obscene, and people have made a complaint about that, and it's...
Can you tell me what this comment was?
We'll do that
when we interview.
All right. And okay. So what am I going to be locked up for the night? Or?
Hopefully not.
I mean, that's insane.
That's real?
Yeah, that's a real thing. That's not the first time it happened. Remember the joke someone made on social media and the police went and visited her? The girl that they went and visited? And she said she made the remark to the police officer that you look like a lesbian. Because she was a young autistic girl, and her grandmother actually was a lesbian, and the woman had a short haircut like her grandmother did, and they said it was hate speech, and they were going to try to arrest like this. She was like 13 or 14 years old. Remember that? That stemmed from someone had a comment online. This is the kind of stuff that they do. There's no free speech over there. You know, if we would have had that Ministry of Misinformation, it would have been the same. You would have had a knock on your door, and they would have said you violated a rule. You posted something offensive on Facebook. What? It's offensive. You can't post something that hurts people's feelings on Facebook, Kane. It's just not appropriate, mate. It's not. That's the world that we live in. There's no freedom over there. None at all. None at all. So I'm glad that there's a change. Now, a few other things I want to make sure that we're hitting, because we also have been talking about the issue with Syria. And we're going to dive into this a little more with Stephen Yates coming up at the bottom of the hour. And because you already have Republicans kind of seeing opportunities, people like Lindsey Graham, seeing some opportunities for involvement, United States involvement. And that is not where, obviously, the U.S. should be. And we're going to talk about the implications of all of that coming up.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So maybe pot noodle wasn't the best way to smuggle pot into prison. What is a pot noodle? Okay, because I'm once again not able to open this stupid thing. I just would think that if you're smuggling stuff into prison, I mean, I've seen Mayor of Kingstown. You know, it's a great show. I don't know if you've seen it or not. It's a great show. But I just feel like maybe, I don't know. That's maybe not the best way to go about getting stuff into prison. I don't know. By the way, everything froze, so I have no access to anything right now. Tell me, Kane, what is a pot noodle?
A pot noodle? I guess it's a one of those things you throw into a pot and includes noodles. And if it's Asian, then it'd probably be like a hot pot type situation. But the bottom line is...
Okay, we're back in business.
Okay, the bottom line is they thought it was food. It was not food.
Can you OD on the... I mean, if you listen and if you noodle? Listen to all the Reefer Madness people, you can OD on it.
On pot noodle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
No.
The woman, Victoria Sked, she was hiding a lot of contraband on her person. MDMA, psychoactive substances, vials of steroids. Jeez. She was just like a walking, you know, bodega. I was trying to say it like Joe Biden. It was really hard. But apparently it's like a huge operation. And they bring outside stuff into the prison. And anyway, yeah, she's in trouble. And apparently her whole ring of people are in trouble. A chemical spill at an Anheuser-Busch brewery in California led to an evacuation, according to CBS News. This Los Angeles Fire Department, they said it was a fire involving hazardous materials, blah, 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 blah. I'm not as interested in this. I'm not. Let me go to... I want this one. No, this is not real. Is this real?
What?
The pit diaper.
Yeah, that's... I was looking... It has its own website. Look, the link is right there. I provided the link. It's apparently... Now, it looks like a comedy thing. It looks like something that you would see...
How is it sold out? I don't believe this.
Yeah, it's sold out.
So the pit diaper is... If you've been to a concert and you they said the scariest place isn't the mosh pit, it's the bathroom. And you don't have to brave that hellscape with a pit diaper powered by Depend. And it looks like a Chanel quilted leather with like a Lemmy kind of gold skull.
Oh, man. Look at that.
This is not real.
Look at that. Wait a minute.
But it's from the Liquid Death people.
If you're hard enough to go to the mosh pit but not the bathroom, there's something wrong with
you. Dude, have you been to... Well, I know you've been to some of the dive bar bathrooms.
Yeah,
Kane,
I've been in mosh pits too.
I'm pretty sure that you can get like all the diseases in the world. That's where Wu Flu came from.
Guys have the least... What? What did you say?
No, I don't know. Let's move to the next headline. Slap therapy. An alternative healer got 10 years in prison for the death of a woman at a slap therapy workshop. I mean, how is that a thing? It's slapping therapy. It was a 71-year-old diabetic woman who stopped taking insulin during one of his workshops. Was he like telling her he was going to slap the diabetes out of her? How in the world? The technique has its roots in Chinese medicine, but critics say that it's stupid because it's dumb. It is dumb. It's so dumb. Stephen Yates is up next. Stick with us.
Brighten up your timely news consumption with a Dana Show podcast, where every update comes with a little dash of not so serious on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you at the bottom of this third hour. And, you know, you can listen to us across the country, Channel 347, DirecTV as well. Rumble is where the chat happens, and make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack. So one of the other big stories, because we were covering the Notre Dame, we're covering the Daniel Penny trial, the UnitedHealthcare CEO assassination. There's a lot of stuff to discuss. And then obviously everything exploding with Syria, which is so, I'm trying not to tinfoil hat it, but it seems very convenient timing to me. Everything is sort of kept at a stalemate until now. Trump is going to be going into office in January. It's just odd. But if you're following, Bashar al-Assad is now apparently given asylum in Russia. And Iran looks like one of the biggest losers in this. Russia also. And China. And there's always a China element. But we want to talk about this with our good friend Stephen Yates, who, as you know, worked in two presidential administrations, including previously for POTUS-elect back in 2016. He's also an expert at all things related to China, and he is a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and you can find him at X. I finally got it, without hesitating. Yates Comms. Doesn't work if I point it out, though. He joins us via Skype. Stephen, always good to see you. I mean, obviously, this situation with Bashir, there's no good choices here, and I was listening to this audio soundbite of Joe Biden earlier. We played it earlier, where he said that we need to aid the new regime in Syria. And I'm thinking, you mean the terrorists that are coming through, right? Because they're different sides of the same coin, essentially. I mean, it's, correct me if I'm wrong on this. This is all about, you know, the Shiite, Persian Shiite versus the Sunni Muslims. And you have, and then as it relates to Assad, you have terrorists and Assad, who kind of is a terrorist. So there are no good choices here.
Yeah, it's a real test of whether we've learned anything from Iraq, Afghanistan, Arab Spring, Obama's line in the sand. I mean, there are a lot of forces at play in Syria. It's a little bit of a devil's playground. Russia definitely had been exercising influence there. China is always supplying and seeking advantage in these kinds of things. Iran definitely is the sort of civilizational power trying to tip the balance in that region. We also have our NATO ally, Turkey, which is not an easy relationship to manage of itself, right on the border, and has a significant influence there too. Just a whole lot going on there. The last thing that we should be signing up for is some open-ended commitment to say that we're going to pick winners and craft democracy for rebels getting together on things. We might have some role in trying to stabilize things from getting out of control, but really this is just a perfect example for the Trumpian adjustment to American foreign policy of, our friends in the region need to take the lead, and let's see what we can do to play supporting cast so that things don't get too bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's who would we, I mean, this, it reminds me so much, it seems very similar to me in some respects to Libya.
Yes, with, very much.
With Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration looking as, in the very beginning, I remember when all of that fell apart and, you know, the video came out of Gaddafi and then they're like, well, we have to support the new regime. What regime? The terrorists that are coming through? I mean, it's there's no other option. And I mean, it's true that that Syria was basically allowing Iran to have like a direct funnel to Hezbollah. I mean, that's one of the reasons that which I thought was very good that they did when Israel pretty much decimated Hezbollah in the north. I mean, that they were getting hit by all sides, and it kind of like, you know, it showed, and Iran was having to respond. Hezbollah is having to deal with Israel. Russia's in Ukraine. It was really leaving Syria, you know, Assad utterly exposed. They really had no muscle of their own.
Yeah, well, I saw a pretty insulting comment by our current national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, suggesting that the Middle East was getting more stable because of Biden foreign policy. And I think an astute observer on X basically said, nope, the Middle East is getting more stable because Israel has acted on its own and ignored Biden foreign policy.
Yeah.
And I think that's been the case around the on several cases.
What would that have looked like had they not?
Oh, no kidding. I mean, it's just, you know, this whole region, the provocative weakness of the Biden administration from the catastrophic Afghanistan events going forward, really, it's hard to imagine what would have happened if our allies hadn't said, hey, you know, we've had enough and we're going to take things in our own hands, which is, you know, basically It's not done for the right reason. We'd like it to be cooperative and good ideas from America that encourage this. But whether it's the Middle East, the Europe, Asia, this is the way ahead.
Wow. Talking with our good friend Stephen Yates, I know that it's kind of like moot to bring this up now because Assad's, you know, now an asylee, I guess, of Russia. But for a hot minute when people didn't know if he was going to stay and try to hold on to power, I kept wondering, well, is China going to maybe step into that role that Iran had occupied or that Russia had occupied? Russia was having to pull out assets for Ukraine, and then Iran's having to deal with Israel, and they're being rocked with Hezbollah. Was that ever a possibility? Because I know Syria is a Belt and Road country, but were they ever, I don't know, that, I mean, is Syria that important to China?
More opportunistically, but you correctly note that really, with every different controversy that's popped up in recent years, especially during the Biden administration, China at some point tries to put forward their version of a peace plan or something that tries to show that the American-led Western way of life is on the decline and China's and their friends' way of doing business is on the rise. I don't think they really had an opportunity. This was just too fast moving for them. But they've tried to put these things forward for Gaza, for Russia, Ukraine from different times. So I'm sure they would have had something to say if this had dragged on. I'm kind of surprised that this cork was in the bottle for as long as it was. But then when it went really fast.
Yeah, it went incredibly fast. I mean, and is the timing, am I just too tinfoil hat with this? Because it just is very interesting, the timing here. I mean, Biden's on his way out. Trump's going to be in office in, what, a month?
Yeah, well, so I think a lot is happening in the world because people anticipate change ahead. It's really hard to tell where the Syria situation is going to really go. There's a lot of volatile parts in that mix. But in general, a lot of bad actors around the world are looking to make whatever moves they can now to settle into what they hope is a new normal, because they know that there's going to be a different approach and no patience when it comes to President-elect Trump coming back and saying this is what we want to have happen, and these are friends we're going to work with. And if you cross us and hurt us, he's not looking to nation build, but he'll use force when he needs to.
Now, dare I say that they looked happy even greeting him when he was there at the Notre Dame. I mean, it was how different was that meeting from like 2016 and previous ones?
No, it was mind blowing. Now, because we live in an internet age where people can meme and AI things, there was some true hilarity that happened in terms of Jill Biden and Donald Trump being together in Notre Dame. But it was really remarkable to see world leaders lining up, and it's like they had springs in their seats. They popped up. They were all smiles. He didn't have to sort of manspread his way to the front of the line. He did. He just showed up, and people willingly were wanting to engage him. You could just see a palpable hunger for, hey, this is a vigorous, real leader, and this is just a different Trump. This is a different time. And maybe the rest of the world is going to say, we want to give this a second try.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to have someone there that's like sentient and is aware of it. I know that Jill Biden and Ashley Biden were kind of there, but they just were sort of, I mean, it's not just me, right? They were kind of treated as like afterthoughts. I mean, he's the president now, regardless of whether or not, you know, we've had the inauguration and he's sworn on the Bible, he's the president.
No, this is such a different transition and such a different kind of environment, in part because Biden has been on the slow fade really from inauguration. Especially just the way things have broken. I think the best funny truth that came out of it was the Prince of England waiting to meet the real king when he came into the greeting room for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And so basically, when you have the royal family of England looking to embrace Trump before he's even back in office, you know the world has changed a bit.
Very much so. I wanted to ask you and kind of switch gears and look towards, obviously, China. Because China's, you know, I saw that one of the headlines where they were urging, you know, people in Syria to ensure safety of Chinese residents. And they kind of, you know, been watching all of this unfold. You have Iran now that's, I would say that they're entirely becoming destabilized because this has just thrown uncertainty on their regime's, you know, grasp of power. You know, Russia's in the situation that it is in now, so desperate it couldn't even back up Assad in Syria. And now Trump is coming into office in January. how was China looking at this? I saw the one Taipei Times headline, China warships near Taiwan nearly double. But is that just them kind of continuing to save face? Because I cannot see them jumping on that landmine that it would be for themselves and doing something stupid right now with a more becoming conservative Europe, Trump in office, and the big axis of evil there, you know, with Iran and Russia and everybody destabilized.
Yeah, well, just with the usual caveat that Xi Jinping has been a different kind of leader, and I can't impose my rationality on him to try to predict what would go.
Well, he gets offended by Winnie the Pooh. I mean, you know,
there's certain problems there, but it really would be ridiculous and really bad for China's own interest to try to do something now. They, I think, operate under the assumption that President Trump is a businessman and a deal maker. He will be tough when he has to be tough, but they think they know that they can try to engage in a conversation with him where there was no conversation to be had with Joe Biden. And so I don't think they want to toss that option out the window at the start. Mm. But that's rationality. They have been playing with fire with lots of ships and planes going into Taiwan space, lots of ratcheting up of pressure. They really don't need to do that. But they have done it anyway. They've done the same to the Philippines and Japan, where they're playing with fire. I just think that they have to take a step back. You're right about Iran. It's going to be in a fundamentally different place. The money's going to shrink back up again. And China can't bankroll them forever on stuff. So hopefully some realism comes back into play and America will be better off for that.
There you go. And we'll have like really good, awesome things to talk about going into the new year. I mean, yeah. I can't like trying to decide one day you'll join me and be like, Dana, I just can't believe it. China decided they're going to stop being communist, you know, and I mean, it may never happen, but you never know. I mean, weirder things have transpired.
It's a beautiful thought and I will continue to entertain it.
There you go. Stephen Yates at YatesComms on X. Always good to see you, my friend. Thank you so much. Have a good week.
Thank you, Dana. Mm-hmm. Take care.
Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast, because who says you can't make fun of people while staying informed on your own personal time? Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
I really wish that we could just play Donny Hathaway's This Christmas and karaoke this last segment, because this is such a great Christmas song, right?
Oh my gosh.
It's so good. This Christmas. I love this song. There's like certain Christmas songs that I have to play. I mean, yes, in addition to like, you know, the hymns that celebrate, you know, Jesus's birth. But this one by Donny Hathaway is one of them. And then the sleigh bells come in. If you're listening on the radio, you can listen to this. But the simulcast, you can't hear it. But here's where they kick in. There's where they kick in. It's some jingle bells. And then that rhythm settles in and I love that song. You know, the other one that I really like that apparently, I did not realize how much this divides you all. Everybody out there watching and listening, Wings' Wonderful Christmas Time. Yeah. That is a great, great song that half of you hate. Every year we talk about this. I've never discussed this on the show. And I always get emails from people who are like, how can you like that song? That's the worst Christmas song ever. And they can't stand it. And then my own kids make fun of when Paul McCartney gets to the part in the song where he's like, you know, in the choir, the children in the choir. And my kids laugh at it because they think it sounds so, like, those kids suck. They're so bad. That's a great Christmas song too, right? But why does, like, I didn't know it was that divisive. Is that really, Kane, music guy, that divisive? What?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But do you know anyone that doesn't like it?
I'm sure there's somebody.
Communists. Yeah. Has to be.
Probably.
Baby, It's Cold Outside is another one that you got to play.
Yeah.
Even more so now, right? Anything by Bing Crosby, particularly White Christmas. Mm-hmm. Right? Got to have. Yeah. And the only version of Little Drummer Boy that will work for me is Dionne Warwick's. I don't know why. It is the only version that will work for me. Whitney's aunt. Dionne Warwick doing Little Drummer Boy is so good. Her voice is so good. So I don't know. It's like I don't know. Everybody's got their own songs and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to start easing it in Not, I'm not going to like overwhelm you Hallmark style. We're going to start easing it. We got our Christmas. I'm in a snowstorm right now, or a snow globe. One of the two. But we got our, we're all Christmased out. I don't know if anybody's even seen the thing on my desk in front of my screen. I got, I, you know what I think grenades are like? You can see the grenade kind of here, but not really. It's a Christmas bauble. There it is. It's a bauble.
It's
there
you go.
Yeah, it's an American pine cone, the grenade. There it is. All right, so some of the other things, like I said, we've been following all this stuff. There's going to be some pieces coming out for you. There's one of Daniel Penny right now that Lorraine has. It's up at Substack. And, of course, you know, we're going to be watching the situation as it unfolds. This is not going to be something that you have any kind of resolution to literally anytime soon or in our lifetimes with Syria, but it's going to make for a very, very interesting start to the new year, is it not? All right. Today in stupidity came.
All right. This is Biden. Not only did he pledge to send aid to Syria, like he's pledged to send more money to other countries than he ever has, North Carolina, Mali, or anybody recently yeah, here in the United States. But let's go ahead and play cut one. What was he saying here? Let's play a game. Play this.
We will help stability, ensure stability in eastern Syria, protecting any personnel, our personnel, against any threats, and remain our mission against ISIS will be maintained, including the security of detention facilities where ISIS fighters are being held as prisoners.
He's literally a lame duck president, but man, is he really...
Now you can see why he probably didn't go to the Notre Dame's Notre Dame's reopening. Kind of see why. All right, folks, that does it for us today. I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow. I'll be on Jesse Waters' program this evening, 7 p.m. Central. Have a great night.